Hello, hello, hello. My name is Jill Cody, and welcome to Be Bold America. Be Bold America is a live bi-weekly talk show for those who are motivated to step out with the bold actions necessary to begin reuniting this country and save our democracy. Be Bold America is for those who want to understand the unique challenges ahead and who want to learn more about what they can keep doing, stop doing, and start doing to save our democratic republic. Our future depends on it. Our program today, The Corporate Coup d'Etat. The movie, The Corporate Coup d'Etat, takes a complex political and historical theme and brings it to life. It creates a powerful cinematic experience that explains how President Trump is the result of failed neoliberal globalist policies and a corporate coup d'etat in which corporations and billionaires were able to gradually take control of the political process in the United States and elsewhere. The film follows independent journalists including Chris Hedges, Philip Martin, Sarah Jaffe, Matt Taibbi, and Lee Fong as they expose government and corporate deception and show how democracy first began selling its soul to big corporations. Soon, we'll be speaking with the movie's executive producer, Jeff Cohen. We have big things to do. But first, I'd like to introduce today's in-studio guest, Dr. Ronnie Lipschutz. Ronnie is a professor of politics at University of California, Santa Cruz. He teaches and writes about energy, resources, and social sustainability, global politics and sociology, politics and popular culture, and the surveillance society. He is the author and co-author and editor and co-editor of numerous books and articles. In addition, Dr. Lipschutz now has his own radio program on KSQD called Sustainability Now. Welcome to the program, Ronnie.
Welcome. Thank you, Jill. It's good to be here.
Well, you were my very first in-studio guest when Be Bold America started, so welcome back.
Well, I'm glad to be back.
Our bold and special expert guest, who's been waiting patiently on the phone, is a distinguished activist, media professional, and movie producer. Jeff Cohen is a media critic, lecturer, and founding director of the Park Center for Independent Media at Ithaca College, where he was an associate professor of journalism. He founded the Media Watch Group, Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting, also known as FAIR, or you can reach them at fair.org, in 1986, and co-founded the online activist group rootsaction.org in 2011. Jeff has co-produced documentary movies such as the one we're going to be discussing today, The Corporate Coup d'Etat, and All Governments Lie. He is the author of the book, Cable News Confidential, My Misadventures in Corporate Media. Jeff has been a TV commentator at CNN, Fox News, and MSNBC, and was senior producer of MSNBC's Phil Donahue primetime show until it was terminated 3 weeks before the Iraq invasion. Last but not at all least, his columns have been published online at such websites as HuffPost, Common Dreams, and Truthout, and in dozens of dailies, including USA Today, The Washington Post, The Los Angeles Times, The Boston Globe, The Atlantic Constitution, and The Miami Herald. You may learn even more about Jeff at jeffcohen.org. That's C-O-H-E-N, jeffcohen.org. Thank you for joining us today, Jeff. What a pleasure it is to have you on the program.
Hey, it's great to be with you. I've been reading your great book, America Abandoned, and boy, it seems to be the book on which our movie, The Corporate Coup, was based, but I didn't know about your book until you sent it to me a few weeks ago. It's tremendous.
Thank you so much for saying that. Well, I thought your movie was tremendous. I think I watched it three times, and it's a very important movie you created, just imperative for everyone to see, and they can. It's right there on the homepage at First Run Features. Is that correct, Jeff?
Yes, firstrunfeatures.com. Or if you want to go the corporate route, it's also on iTunes for rent or purchase. It's on Amazon for rent or purchase. But firstrunfeatures.com is where I direct people to go, and it's on their homepage.
Well, I would encourage people after they hear our discussion to purchase a copy so they do a have a in-home a showing for friends and family. But thank you for your kind words on my...
It's a great organizing tool.
It's a great organizing tool.
Activists have been using this.
Good, yeah. Good, yes. And I'm thank you for your kind words on my book. They mean a lot, and here we are on different coasts, but we're simpatico in knowing what we're facing. Jeff, you know, I'm going to start with a compound question. And first, why did you make the documentary, The Corporate Coup d'Etat? What message and actions do you want viewers to take away after watching it? And also, if you could answer, are we living in a feudal corporatocracy? The reason I ask you is to include this, is that after the Citizens United Supreme Court decision 10 years ago now, I saw Tom Hartman at an event, and I asked him if he thought we still lived in a democratic republic. And he said no, and that he thought we had become a feudal corporatocracy. What do you think, Jeff, about why you made the documentary and the message and actions, and are we living in a feudal corporatocracy?
Yeah, I think we made the movie because we know that this material is available from columnists, from authors, in books. And there's something special about a 90-minute documentary that you can really give people a jolt if they come into someone's home or they go into a movie theater or they just watch this alone at home. There's something, in a 90-minute experience, you can learn the whole history of how a handful of giant corporations have taken control of U.S. politics and the U.S. economy. And, it's not just a history lesson, our movie, The Corporate Coup d'Etat. It's also, the devastating impact of living in an oligarchy, living under oligarchy, the devastating impact, whether you're a black resident of Camden, New Jersey, or a former union steel worker in Youngstown, Ohio. We took our cameras to both of those places, interviewed working class people, the kinds of people that don't get on corporate mainstream TV very much. And we talked to them about what they've been experiencing, the real victims of the corporate takeover of our country. So, we show the history and we show the impacts of the corporate coup d'etat. The message is simple. The message of the movie is simple. It's that our democracy has been totally undermined by oligarchy. The two things are not compatible. You can't have rule by the people when there are 600 billionaires who fund the politicians, own the media, fund the think tanks. It's incompatible to have rule by the people when there's this tiny ruling elite that's gaining more wealth, more power, more opinion-shaping power. The actions that this movie is inspiring, I mean, everywhere I've gone with this movie, and I've taken it to both coasts and in between, the people want it. When they see the movie, it immediately leads to an organizing meeting. All right, who's going where? Who's going to be at the next? Who's organizing for Bernie Sanders? I'm in the Warren camp. We want to tax wealthy people to provide programs for the middle class and the working class. Come to a Warren meeting. Come to a Democratic Socialists of America meeting. I mean, the movie has really spurred a lot of activism. It brings people together in one room. We've been sponsored. It's great to be on a community radio station because as I went throughout the state of Oregon, I was often sponsored by community radio stations. And obviously, you can tell when you're in a place that has a Pacifica-affiliated community radio station because people's consciousness is just at a higher level. In answer to your question, how would I describe the system that we live under? Mm-hmm. Well, you could call it the corporate coup system. You could call it the corporatist system. You could call it the corporatocracy. But it's a process that your book talks about and our movie documents, the process of 40 years of neoliberal predatory capitalism, where the wealth and income and power have gone to a tiny elite. It's not just the 1%. It's the 1/10 of the 1%. And what they have captured is 99% of the Republican Party and half of the Democratic Party. So, no, I wouldn't say we live in a democracy. There are dozens of societies that are more advanced democratically than ours, which is sort of sad because we were the original modern democracy. But no, we have to rebuild a democracy, and you can only do that if you take power from the corporate governing elites.
Can you just take a couple minutes, Jeff, and just explain a little bit about the Powell Manifesto? Because I think that was really a launch point in our modern. Go ahead.
Yes, it's in our movie. It's in your book. The Powell memo was written by Lewis Powell, who was then an attorney for the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. It was written in the early 70s. And Powell basically urged corporations that have, remember, through the 1940s, 50s, and 60s, and 70s, early 70s, corporations, by and large, accommodated themselves to having unions in many places. I grew up in Detroit, Michigan, where we had a powerful United Auto Workers union. And so, you know, you had this period from the 30s, late 30s to the 70s, because of activism, because of the union movement, because of socialist movements, you had a flowering of democracy and a flowering of the middle class. And that scared the hell out of Lewis Powell, this attorney for the Chamber of Commerce. So he wrote this memo. I think it came out in 71. And the memo basically was saying that corporations have to fight back. There's too much democracy. It was a direct reaction to the growth of the new left in the late 60s, the growth of movements for peace, for justice, for the environment, for women, for gays. It was a reaction that there's just too much activism, too much progressivism, and it was a call to action that corporations can't just sit there and pocket their profits. They have to take some money and invest it in political change, political dominance, media dominance, creating think tanks. It was sort of across the board. Here's how corporations have to take their money, spend it to make sure that corporate power does not diminish. And that was the Powell memo. I'd say it really took off in the late 70s and then when Reagan was elected in 1980.
And then Nixon had appointed him to the U.S. Supreme Court, and that leads to a whole other group of decisions.
Yeah, I should have. I should have mentioned that. The Powell memo was written when he was just a corporate lawyer, and it did not surface until after Nixon put him on the U.S. Supreme Court.
Exactly.
So, and if the memo had surfaced prior, there's no way Lewis Powell would have made it onto the Supreme Court. But he got appointed to the Supreme Court, and then the Powell memo became public information.
We'll return just in a moment to our special guests, Jeff Cohen and Dr. Ronnie Lipschutz, in a minute. First, tune in to KSQD Monday evening at 6 p.m. for Climate One, produced by the Commonwealth Club. Climate One is a forum for candid discussion among climate scientists, policymakers, activists, and concerned citizens with a focus on energy, the economy, and the environment. Climate One airs evenings at 6 p.m. right after Talk of the Bay here on KSQD 90.7 FM and KSQD.org. You're listening to Be Bold America, KSQD 90.7 FM, many voices, one station. And you're listening to the executive producer of the movie The Corporate Coup d'Etat, Jeff Cohen, where you can find the movie at First Run Features. And also our in-studio guest, who I haven't allowed talk yet, is Dr. Ronnie Lipschutz, UCSC politics professor and host of Sustainability Now on KSQD. I'm your host, Jill Cody. Ronnie, do you have a question for our guest, Jeff?
Well, you know, I know about the Powell memorandum and the argument about its outsized influence, but of course, in many ways, it was merely a document, and it needed somehow to be implemented. And I think the interesting question is how did this happen? Okay, I mean, we say, you know, the corporations basically move to take power, but this is about politics and political economy. And I think it's interesting to sort of contemplate what were the circumstances that made this possible. I mean, I have theories, but I want to ask you.
Well, I think you're right. The Powell memo was merely a memo, pieces of paper. But what immediately started happening was some of the groups and institutions that Powell had called for started being funded and launched. I'm thinking of the Heritage Foundation. I'm thinking of the American Legislative Exchange Council. These are all corporate-funded groups aimed at using the political system, using in many ways mobilizing the Christian evangelicals to become sort of shock troops for the corporate agenda. And you had funders, and Jill in her book, America Abandoned, identifies a number of the early funders immediately responding to the Powell memo, people like the Coors family, and then the Koch brothers, the Koch family. These were hugely wealthy families that decided, you know, up in the 50s and 60s and 70s, when the middle class was growing, and unions represented one out of every three American worker. What rich people did with their money is they, you know, set up a charity, or they'd fund an art gallery, art museum. And I think what really changed in the 70s and 80s was this movement among a few dozen wealthy corporate types to try to create this corporate political movement, using front groups, using language like the middle class and let's streamline government, you know, using all sorts of coded language, basically to try to figure out how to acquire more wealth and power for wealthy individuals and the corporate elite.
You know, I tell my students as a rule of thumb that if you're really good and you're playing a game, you can win on the basis of runs scored. But it's much better to be able to shape the rules of the game. And if you can shape the rules of the game, you can win before you ever start playing. And it does seem to me, especially now with the Trump administration, you see this in spades, that what corporations have basically been able to do, which they did, of course, before the 1970s, but after that, they've really been able to sort of get in there and lobby. And places like the Heritage Foundation and Cato and ALEC provided legislators with this sort of, you know, material and arguments about how this form of capitalism, which is no longer competitive capitalism but oligarchic capitalism, was so much superior. And of course, the whole sort of speculative economy, all of these things sort of come out of that idea that, you know, it's much better to make the rules than it is to follow the rules.
Well, Jeff, right in your movie, who was the first name of Saul? He even said democracy is secondary.
John Ralston Saul.
Say it again, please. I'm sorry.
Yeah, John Ralston Saul.
Yeah.
Right. He said democracy is secondary product of free enterprise. That's exactly what I think Ronnie's talking about. Right.
Well, certainly now.
Right.
I think that what Ronnie's saying is hitting the nail on the head. That what they did was they rewrote the rules for their own interests, and once the rules changed, and they had their hands on all the levers that make the game go. We really started shrinking and shrinking the democracy. They didn't just set up those corporate lobbying groups that would write the legislation and then get it sent state by state to the state legislatures and state capitals. They also made a lot of inroads into the media. They set up think tanks that were quoted so overwhelmingly more than the non-corporate think tanks. The Media Watch group that I started, FAIR, which produces the weekly radio show Counterspin, they've documented year after year that in Washington there are think tanks that are corporate funded, and then there are think tanks that are not. There are think tanks on the left and in the center and in the and on the right. And in study after study, FAIR has shown that the think tanks that get quoted over and over in mainstream media, whether it's NPR or PBS or NBC or New York Times or Washington Post, are indeed these corporate-funded think tanks that extend from the center to the right, and the progressive think tanks that stand up for environmental interests, for workers' interests, for consumers' interests. Those think tanks, even though they're producing, in most cases, more accurate scholarship, those think tanks just aren't quoted. And part of that is the corporate dominance of the media. Not only are the media owned by a handful of giant corporations, but the news is sponsored by these giant corporations, including NPR and PBS, which are supposed to be public networks. In other countries, they have truly public broadcasting. In our country, even public broadcasting has been corporatized with all the donations. And when you, FAIR has done study after study of NPR and PBS and have shown that the same narrow center to right corporate spectrum of experts and sources that are quoted in commercial media, they're the same ones quoted on public TV and in public radio. That it's what I call the General Electric to General Motors spectrum. It's a corporate spectrum. Some of them are Democrats, some of them are Republicans, but they're all corporate, or they don't get into regular rotation in mainstream media.
Well, one of the things that your documentary showed me and taught me was, because I don't get on to the East Coast very often, but the concept of sacrifice zones. Can you explain to our listeners what sacrifice zones are?
Yeah, sacrifice zones. It's a key part of the movie, and we use two examples: Camden, New Jersey, and Youngstown, Ohio area. A sacrifice zone is a place that corporations have used. They've benefited from subsidies from the taxpayer, from taxpayers providing them police security, taxpayers building the roads that went to their factory gates. So it's these zones where corporations took out the resources, took the labor power, and then the minute they could find a cheaper way of maximizing, a cheaper way of using labor and a better way of maximizing profit, they just split and left those zones as zones of despair, zones of prostitution, zones of opioid addiction. So we focused, the original sacrifice zones, of course, were inner cities, were inner cities inhabited largely by African Americans and Latinos. And then in the 70s and 80s, sacrifice zones started going to what's now called the Rust Belt. And our movie sort of talks about the beginnings of the Rust Belt, when corporations in steel and auto started closing down and sending their factories to countries that had no unions, factories that were paying near starvation wages, and they just picked up and left. And they left behind despair. And what we showed in the movie, it's one of the, I think when reviewers have talked about the movie and audiences have talked about the movie, what really, I think, registers with viewers of the corporate coup d'etat is the despair and anger that the 40 years of corporate pillage has left behind. That in African American areas like Camden, New Jersey, there's just complete despair. In cities like Milwaukee, Detroit, where I grew up, the voter turnout in 2016 among African Americans took in many cities a precipitous fall. There was this feeling of despair. I mean, even an African-American president was in power for 8 years, and the disparities between the rich and the rest of us kept growing. Mm-hmm. And so in black communities, there was real despair. It led to lack of voter turnout. And in more white working-class communities, and we interviewed a lot of former union auto workers who'd been, I'm sorry, union steel workers in Ohio that had been lifelong Democrats, that out of their anger with what had gone on over the decades and the destruction of their communities by corporate greed, a number of these lifelong Democrats who voted for Obama, voted for Bernie in the primary over Hillary, they then voted for Trump. And we interviewed a number of these workers, and it comes as a shock, but a lot of audiences have said one of the most important things in our movie is that we let people who voted for Trump talk and explain what they did. And for many of them, I think it was a vote of total despair and anger.
Well, one of the scenes in the movie, too, was something Reagan said that I hadn't heard before, and that was the quote that we're going to turn the bull loose. And it had a whole nother meaning to me after I learned about sacrifice zones, that turning the bull loose was just, you know, let's privatize everything. Let's go in and just suck out whatever we can from a community and then move on.
Yep. Let's turn the greed loose.
Let's turn the greed loose.
We have these euphemisms.
Yes.
Yeah. It's all these euphemisms that we get from the media, like, free market and competitive capitalism and the more competition, the better for the consumer. We don't have competition. We have cooperation among corporations to that they all get rich and not compete with each other. And so what you've had in this country is obviously corporations have held a lot of sway in our country from the time of slaves. You know, obviously it's not a new thing, but the new thing is that beginning in the late 70s, early 80s, it went into overdrive where there was an ideology, a collection of institutions working together to radically transform the political economy through deregulation so that corporations basically controlled the government. We don't have regulators controlling Wall Street. We have Wall Street controlling the regulators. You can say the same thing in agribusiness and almost any industry. The regulators, these institutions that were set up during more progressive eras to help foment competition, to help prevent monopolization, to help the consumer, all these different, the Federal Trade Commission, the Federal Communications Commission, OSHA, the Environmental Protection Agency, all of these agencies that were set up to help the public interest against greedy corporate interests have been captured by the greedy corporate interests. And I think we show that well in this movie.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Be Bold America on KSQD 90.7 FM. I'm your host, Jill Cody.
KSQD thanks attorney Ned Hearn for supporting this program. Ned Hearn specializes in intellectual property and business law with a focus on entertainment, internet, and computer software business and their convergence, intersecting content, media, and technology in the digital environment. More info at www.internetmedialaw.com. Thank you, Ned Hearn, for supporting KSQD 90.7 FM.
Try to see it my way.
What to Be features college students interviewing creative, surprising, passionate people about their careers. If you have ever wondered what to be, please join us Sundays, 7 p.m., K-Squid, 90.7 FM.
Back to our impressive guests, Jeff Cohen and Ronnie Lipschutz. Jeff co-founded the online activist group Roots Action, and you may sign up for action alerts, as I did, at rootsaction.org. Jeff also founded Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting, which, by the way, is needed now more than ever before. You may sign up for their media news analysis at fair.org. Dr. Ronnie Lipschutz is our in-studio guest and is our politics professor at UCSC. And you may hear his radio show, Sustainability Now, Sundays at 5 p.m., alternating with Be Bold America. So, Ronnie, do you have a question for our guest?
Well, you know, again, it's more of an observation, and that is that accompanying all of this has been a sort of, I don't know exactly what to call it, but a change in social psychology, that the idea of acting together, acting collectively, of course, has been greatly discredited in the political arena, right? And the idea of individual choice, which is so critically important in market propaganda, becomes sort of diffused throughout the society. And I think about Burger King and Have It Your Way as being the, you know, early articulation of you don't have to worry about anybody else except yourself. And that, of course, plays right into the hands of corporate power, which is highly aggregated. And so the rest of us are just, you know, schlemiels out there, basically watching out for ourselves and never thinking about society at large. And voting then becomes much more of a sort of a market-based operation than one that has a lot to do with politics. You know, so it's not just a matter of the corporations aggregating power. It's also a matter of creating the psychological conditions to disempower the public at large.
Well, there was a point, I think it was Cornel West, who said that the fundamental threat, this was in Jeff's movie, the fundamental threat was cultural division. You know,
well, it's more than just cultural division. I mean, that's important, mm-hmm, right? But mm-hmm. It's this whole idea of, you know, the self as a center of entrepreneurship, mm-hmm, and a source of human and personal capital, right? That we become little corporations unto ourselves in a way. And that is real. I mean, I do the same thing, you know, in teaching, which is probably not a great thing to do, but it's really very much part of the sort of contemporary worldview.
Jeff?
Yeah, you guys have put a lot of food for thought out there. Cornel West refers to the divide and conquer, which is how corporations have often maximized their governing elites, ruling elites have maximized their power by dividing, you know, working class people by race and gender and religion and nationality. But I think Ronnie is talking about something that's really crucial, which is basically market propaganda. That there was this push beginning decades ago to get us to think of ourselves not as citizens in a democracy, but to think of ourselves as atomized, isolated consumers who can have a great life because we have all this choice. As Ronnie said, you know, have it your way, Burger King. And so there's been, I think, you know, television is almost a 24/7 propaganda system, from the commercials to the programming. And it's basically to encourage us to see ourselves not as citizens, but as consumers. And you might remember Margaret Thatcher, the corporatist Prime Minister of England, when she was asked, well, what about society? She says, there's no such thing as society. And there's been an effort from the propaganda system to get us to think of ourselves as individuals who buy things, and you win the game if you can accumulate enough money, so you can buy a lot of things. And what irks me when I say that the corporate elite, the corporate ruling class, the corporatocracy, the corporate coup, that they control 99% of the Republican Party and half of the Democratic Party, that's not the kind of thing you will ever hear said on MSNBC, CNN, or Fox News. I mean, you got Fox News supports one party, and CNN and MSNBC supports the corporate wing of the Democratic Party, and they have a lot of contempt for the progressive wing of the Democratic Party. So when I hear Ronnie talk about, you know, have it your way, and how we get this market propaganda about all the choices we have in society between Burger King and McDonald's, or Coke and Pepsi, and, you know, so you've had this debate within the Democratic Party, where the progressive wing of the party is saying, why can't we have universal health care, Medicare for all, where everyone has health coverage, and health coverage at a higher level than they have now under private plans. And you have sort of the corporate candidates in the Democratic Party, and the questioners at the debates. You know, you have the Democratic National Committee, CNN and MSNBC and NBC and PBS to run the debates, which to me is ridiculous, because those are not progressive institutions. Those are corporate institutions, and they ask question after question, saying, how come you want to kick 140 million people off of the private health care that they love, the private health insurance that they really like? And, you know, the obvious answer, and Bernie Sanders has made this point, but he's always outnumbered, is, well, I don't think any consumer out there who under Medicare for All will be getting more complete health coverage for less money is going to say, no, I want Aetna, I want Cigna, I want my United Healthcare plan. It's utterly absurd, but the propaganda system has been working overtime in the last few months, and they're spending millions and millions of dollars. And they have candidates like Biden and Buttigieg basically using health insurance company talking points to try to prevent our developed country from moving to where all other developed countries are and have universal health care. We don't have it. And it's, and, you know, the other propaganda, you talk about market propaganda at these debates, these Democratic Party debates run by corporate news outlets. The other thing you've had questioners say over and over is, well, a lot of the unions, they're afraid of Medicare for All because they've negotiated such good health care plans through years of negotiation. And obviously the answer is, yeah, they've given up wages. Everyone knows this. I grew up in Detroit. You know, the United Auto Workers have continuously given up and compromised and surrendered and sacrificed on wages and on working conditions because they're trying to hold on to their darn health care. Whereas the Canadian auto workers, they're much more militant. They actually split away from the United Auto Workers because in Canada, everyone's on Medicare for All. So it's not, you're not held to a job. You're not fearful that if I leave this job, I'll lose my health care, because health care is something you're born with. And so when I've heard at these debates all these objections to having universal health care and why we need a corporate system, the arguments are utterly absurd, and half of the candidates put forward those absurd arguments, and they get patted on the heads by the moderators of these debates. And then in the middle of these debates, they'll cut to an advertisement, and it will be propaganda from the health insurance companies.
Yeah, one of the things to observe is the consolidation of the whole healthcare industry over the last 15 or 20 years. You know, big corporations buying each other up in order, according to them, to offer greater efficiencies. It's sort of the same as in the cell phone industry, right? That you get bigger and bigger corporations all arguing contra free market competition, that you know, oligarchy and monopoly is somehow going to be more efficient and offer greater economies. And of course, this is just complete nonsense. But at the same time,
we're supposed to forget.
I have great health insurance through the University of California, but I'll tell you, whenever I have to deal with these people, not with the doctors, but with these health insurance people, I wish to God, you know, they would just go away. So it is kind of strange, right?
I think that's it. Well, you're raising some interesting points, that we're supposed to forget that decades ago, the propaganda of why capitalism in the United States was so great is it provided so much competition. And then for the last few decades, they've been arguing just the opposite, and we're supposed to not notice that.
Yes.
Now they're arguing what you just argued, which is let a few corporations take over every industry, and they have. They've taken over the media industry. Yeah. They've taken over the pharmaceutical industry. They've taken over the health insurance industry. And by the way, health insurance companies, as you say, I was at Ithaca College. I had a decent plan, but Medicare for All would give me even more, because I didn't have eyeglass coverage. I didn't have, there were a bunch of coverages I didn't have that would be in the Bernie Sanders plan, and I'd be spending less money. And society would be spending less money. But think about it. In 2018, even in one quarter, the big eight health insurance companies in one quarter made $7 billion in profit.
And this,
so think about all those billions of dollars that went to them instead of going to health or medicine or curing. It all went to these corporations, and we keep hearing from the corporate media, especially the corporate liberal media like CNN and MSNBC, that we can't do without these corporations. By the way, in 2018, the median income for a health corporation CEO was about $16 million for the year.
Oh, my. Well, this is reminding me also of George Lakoff's talking about the words we use. Again, Medicare for All sounds like such a policy, but if we could call it lifetime care, or talk to people about those who are making profit over your pain, profit over your suffering, profit over the death of a family member. They're all, you know, profit over your surgery. That I also wonder if we're, as progressives or as a Democratic Party, not really messaging. We need to learn from these corporations how well they image and brand, and I don't know that we've learned that lesson ourselves. Thoughts,
Jeff? I mean, polls show that in spite of the millions of dollars of propaganda about why our country somehow is not wealthy enough to provide Medicare for All, somehow they can do it in Canada, but somehow we can't. In spite of all of the propaganda, Medicare for All is still very popular. And among Democrats, it's extremely popular, and that's the role that these corporations and their lobbyists and their think tanks play, and the corporate media play, in getting Biden and Buttigieg to start putting out all the health insurance company propaganda talking points in their attacks on what used to be Democratic Party policy. In the 1970s, the Democratic Party platform was single-payer, everyone's in a public health insurance plan, period.
We'll be joining our guests in a moment. Join KSQD Sunday for State of Mind, hosted by Santa Cruz licensed psychotherapist Deborah Schloss. This month, Deborah welcomes Rita, who owns a psychiatric service dog, along with dog trainer and KSQD host Lori Katz. They discuss the remarkable and sometimes life-saving roles that specially trained psychiatric service dogs perform. These service dogs help people suffering with conditions like post-traumatic stress disorder, depression, and severe anxiety, and enable them to function in ordinary ways that others might take for granted. Join us for new understandings and seeds of possibility on State of Mind, immediately following this program of Sunday evenings at 6 p.m. here on KSQD 90.7 FM and KSQD.org. You're listening to Be Bold America, many voices, one station. I'm your host, Jill Cody, and we're speaking with two bold activists, Jeff Cohen at jeffcohen.org and executive producer of Corporate Coup d'Etat, and Dr. Ronnie Lipschutz, USCS politics professor and host of Sustainability Now. One thing, Jeff, that you brought up in the last segment, too, before we go into talking about what listeners can keep doing, stop doing, and start doing, what you talked about Fox News, and you were featured, largely featured, I thought, in Kathleen Taylor's documentary, The Brainwashing of My Dad, where her father became enraged and just unreachable after listening to Fox News and right-wing radio. And she called it brainwashing by stealth. And that put a really good phrase to something that I witnessed when I was on a treadmill recently, where at the exercise studio, there's the bank of TV. And obviously, there's always one on Fox News. And the banner at the bottom said, fake news versus Fox News. And so, the obvious subtle message is that anything other than Fox News is fake. And I thought that was the stealth brainwashing at that moment. So, what are your opinions about Fox News and right-wing radio? Obviously, they're corporations, too. And Fox News was never started to be a news organization. But that's another conversation.
Right.
But how do we...
Yeah, I don't think it's another... I don't think it's another conversation. I mean, if you remember, and we, after the Powell memo, around the time of the Powell memo, Roger Ailes, then working for Nixon, wrote another memo.
Yes.
About the need for GOP TV.
Yes.
And so, it's part of this free market, the movement toward predatory capitalism and corporate power and unbridled corporate greed and the weakening of government oversight. Fox News is a big player in that. And I was actually on the air every weekend for the first 5 years of Fox News, so I was able to see it from the inside. And I still do watch it every day because I think it's the best way to keep track of what Trump is going to do next is to watch Fox News. But you did raise a really important documentary they encourage people to watch. I'm one of the experts interviewed, and I was a consulting producer as Brainwashing of My Dad.
It was excellent.
It really is an important movie. Yeah, and the director is Jen Sanko.
Oh, I thought it was
Jen's
dad. Okay.
No, Jen Sanko.
And, Jen Sanko.
Jen, she's coming out with a new book expanding on the movie, but it's a very valuable movie. I've heard Tom Hartman praise it repeatedly, Brainwashing of My Dad. It's just the power of right-wing media, not just Fox News, but also talk radio, to grab especially white males who might feel anxieties about changes in society, and just encourage those white males to get angrier and angrier at the people that are causing them the problems. Who are they? Oh, it's the liberals, it's the feminists, it's the socialists, it's the, you know...
immigrants.
It's the immigrants, it's the Muslims, it's the unions, everyone except those who really have power in our society, which is big corporations. So talk radio and Fox News are really important in the several decades drive toward increasing power of corporations over the rest of us.
So is there a, for our listeners, when it comes to Fox News, is there a keep, stop, start in there? What, when they have somebody in their family that's watching Fox News?
My keep, what people should keep doing is keep supporting independent media and stations like KSQD. You know, it's really crucial that a station like this, which does not have a corporate owner, does not have corporate sponsorship, it's really important that people keep supporting it. And the way you support independent media isn't just by listening. It's by using email and social media to tell people who are not aware of it, because obviously KSQD does not have an advertising budget.
Correct.
So I encourage people, keep supporting independent media outlets, non-corporate media outlets, keep spreading the word about them, and keep donating.
And on our subjects that we've been talking about and the corporate coup d'etat, do you have some other keep, stop, starts that people need to deal with fighting corporations?
A start would be, let's go to start. A start would be, it's not enough that people are skeptical of Fox News, and I hope they're skeptical of MSNBC, CNN, NPR as well. Mm-hmm. What I encourage people to start doing is become a media activist. And when you want, and when you see something that's biased, when you see a panel that's all corporate and there is no progressive point of view, when you see bias in your local newspaper, get active and fight back and challenge corporate media propaganda and corporate media bias. And the best way to start doing that is to do it collectively. So I encourage people to go to the website fair.org. That's the Media Watch group I started in 1986. You can go on fair.org and just give them your email and your and that's all you need to give them. And you will start being able to challenge media bias and media exclusion and corporate media propaganda in an organized way. And another group that does that is that challenges and fights corporate media bias and corporate media censorship is the online activism group that I helped start, which is called rootsaction.org, rootsaction1word.org. And if you go on that website and give your email and your zip code, we'll help you do a lot of mobilizing online that includes a lot of activism to try to challenge corporate media bias.
That is really excellent. One thing, too, is for people to understand what false equivalency is, too, as they're watching any news station. I saw it a lot. My second book is called Climate Abandoned, and for years I've been watching and participating in the climate fight, and you would see one person who was explaining what the climate crisis or what climate change is, and then one person who was a denier and said it wasn't happening. Yet one person was representing 97 scientists and the other was representing maybe three. And or people will say everyone does it or all politicians do this. Or what are your thoughts about really sensitizing people on false equivalency?
Yeah, it's, again, if you become a fair.org activist, you'll be seeing that all the time. They'll be calling that to your attention. I think NPR and PBS play that role.
I do too.
That they are so intent on not being accused of being liberal or liberal biased that they go out of their way to, when some right winger has done something utterly atrocious, they go out of their way to exaggerate something that a liberal has done or a progressive has done that's one-tenth as bad or egregious or blatant, and elevate that into an equivalent because they have this balance norm. And it's, you know, as a journalism professor, it drove me crazy because when you impose a false balance on a reality that is not balanced, you're distorting the story. You're biasing your news reporting. And I think that happens at NPR and PBS and a lot of other liberal stations.
Yes, and I wanted to thank you for your kind words on community radio. Did you know that Snyder in Michigan had his, what were they called, executive managers that went in and shut down the elected city councils. In Ann Arbor, that executive manager immediately shut down the community radio station because he knew that's how people would find out what they were doing.
Well, there's no doubt. I mean, to me, it begins with the Powell memo and it continues to this day. It's not enough that they have so much corporate money behind their false propaganda. They have to make sure that they can stop any avenues for independent journalism that might expose corporate greed and corporate power. And that's why, I mean, to me, the biggest freedom of the press issue facing us today is not that Donald Trump makes his outrageous, offensive statements against journalists every day. It's that he's working hand in glove with MSNBC's owner, Comcast, and CNN's owner, AT&T, to try to end net neutrality. They have indeed, at the Federal Communications Commission, Trump's FCC has ended an open internet, has ended net neutrality. And it's tied up in the courts. That's the only thing that is preventing these internet providers, and there's only a few of them. There's Comcast, there's AT&T, there's Verizon. And what's interesting is you have so many liberals who think, oh, I'm watching the anti-Trump channels, MSNBC and CNN, and I'm getting the full story. No, MSNBC's owner, Comcast, and CNN's owner, AT&T, have worked hand in glove to try to end an open internet, which would allow AT&T and Comcast to take any of these websites that they dislike or do not pay them or that they do not own and push it into the slow lane, whether it's Democracy Now!, Counterspin, The Young Turks, you name it, Truth Out, Common Dreams, Truth Dig, Alternet. They could all be pushed into the slow lane. Well, it's something you won't hear on the Rachel Maddow show.
Jeff,
you won't
hear it
on the Anderson Cooper show.
I know. I wish we had so much more time. Is that you are just hitting something that's very important to me as well. I want to give a big thank you to today's bold and impressive guest, Jeff Cohen. Find him at jeffcohen.org, executive producer of the Corporate Coup d'Etat, to be found at First Run Features. And Ronnie Lipschutz, listen to his show, Sustainability Now, at 5 p.m. next Sunday. I also want to thank KSQD's program director, Howard Feldman, for being our engineer today. On January 19th, next on Be Bold America, we'll be surviving political tribalism with Dr. Dan Stalder, professor of psychology at the University of Wisconsin, to discuss his article in The Atlantic. You're listening to KSQD Santa Cruz, Many Voices, One Station. Stay tuned for State of Mind with Deborah Schloss. My name is Jill Cody, and thank you for listening to Be Bold America. Keep, stop, start.